Thank you for being here. We will start in moments. The other day in a presentation, I described stress as being due to three things. Number one, that when we encounter things that we believe we cannot do, so we feel ineffective, that's stressful to us. We don't know how to respond to a demand. That's stressful. The second thing is we don't know who we are. So because of that lack of knowingness about who and what we are, we don't know how to use our resources and the resources available to us. And the third point is we don't appreciate ourselves. So today my goal is to give you another view of yourself. And I would ask that you consider whether this is true or not. You recognize, and I can say that the good news is you and I have five physical senses. It makes it really convenient. If we wanted to smell a rose, it's nice to have a sense of smell. It's also nice to have a sense of sight so we can appreciate its beauty, while at the same time we can detect where the thorns on the stem are so we don't grab it with our hand. That wouldn't be so wonderful to our sense of touch. But the bad news is that we have five senses, and so many of us think that that's all there is to us. And it's easy to understand why, because I think we mislearn this early in life, and you can hear it from adults, sophisticated adults, that anything outside of the perceptual range of the five senses is silly, it's falsely imagined, it's not real, it's not real. So consider the non-physical beings, right? Imaginary friends that children have. Imaginary friends, they're ridiculed and they're diminished. And a child, very early on, learns to deny this level of perception. They can even learn to deny their intuition, their gut feeling. It's like, I'm perceiving something. Oh, if it's not your five senses, you better ignore it. Ooh. And it's so odd that we're faced with that situation, because all of us have had experiences that when we look at them, we go like, it's inexplicable. I can't, you know, if reality were only limited to the five senses, I can't really explain what just happened. Some of us, depending on our backgrounds of religious exposure, we say, well, you know, that otherworldly influence, that's divine guidance, that's God, that's angels, that's grace, that's luck, that's fate, that's Holy Spirit, that's good karma, and so on. And if something occurs negatively, we could say, oh, that's demons, those are devils, that's Satan, that's evil spirits. And we quickly imagine those things as being true. Our narrow views of ourselves and life are created by that reliance on our five senses. We look at a mirror and go, oh, that's it. I'm saying we see the densest part of us, but we decide that densest part of us is all that exists of us. That's me. That's me from the top of my head down to the bottom of my feet, down to the ends of my fingers on my left arm and my right arm. That's all there is to me. Even though we try to have conversations about things that are not so easily discerned, for instance, most people are going to be willing to engage in a conversation, or at least superficially, of souls or minds or psyche or the subconscious, the ego. But, you know, because we can't see them or we can't touch them, they're not under a microscope. I'm looking under the microscope and I'm not detecting these things. We generally hesitate to trust in them. Yeah, they probably they could exist, but because we don't know how to use them in our daily lives to create the lives we want, we just like, I think they might exist. The concept of auras is known. And that's another thing that's known superficially. If you said that to certain people in America, they would go like, oh, that's new agey, that's new agey. You say, well, I don't know. You see pictures from the Renaissance period of Christ, and you see halos. It's like, what's that light form above his head? What is that radiation of light around his body in that drawing? Okay, well, maybe we'll call that aura. We'll call it spirit. We'll call it a lot of things. Aura, auric field, our consciousness, the biofield. There are a lot of other names for that. And today I'm going to use force field. Capital F, capital F. For people to think of themselves and this energy around us as being us. And our force field as us is mighty rare. It is that concept that I'd like you to consider today. Some of us believe that this force field is us. The field is us, and our bodies inside of that field, that's just the densest part of us. It's like, The vitality of this force field is pretty easily perceptible because it affects the physical us as well. You know, somebody who is exhausted, somebody who's been sick, somebody who's been on vacation, somebody who's wearing the most beautiful colors for their palette, you go like, that's really noticeable to other people. Their friends would go, oh, you look like hell. What's going on? Oh, I'm sick, I'm this, I'm that. So we use the five senses, and we can perceive the end results of this. We could look at them, we could listen to them, we could watch how they move their bodies, and go, oh boy. Somebody was saying the other day, I already knew this, but it was a reminder, that dogs have perceptual capabilities that they can train dogs to be able to recognize the presence of cancer in a person. And dogs are trained to ride in the car with somebody who has the danger of epileptic seizures. When the dog perceives something, I don't know, somehow in the energy field that, uh-oh, here comes a seizure. They'll alert the driver. The driver pulls off the side of the road, takes precaution, and it's like, wow. Like, what is the dog perceiving? Well, you could say it's this dog's sense of smell. Maybe. Have you ever looked up in the sky in the spring or the summertime and you see a huge flock of birds? There are some things on YouTube YouTube videos that I've seen in the last year of huge number of birds in a flock flying across the sky, zooming this way and zooming that way, like waves of energy. It's just, and then what they do in this video is they put it to beautiful music, and you're like, wow, it's like it's orchestrated, and it's so fantastic. But then you have to say, wait a minute, how could hundreds or even thousands of birds change direction instantly, all at the same time, zoom, and turn left, turn right, go up, go down, go back, go forward? How could they do that? It would be impossible to do that using forms of communication that we generally think of. One bird blowing a whistle, some bird yelling march or turn left, or not going to happen. That would take too much time. So it seems really obvious to us that there must be some invisible form of communication that's going on between these birds. That's the only thing that could explain their capability to change direction like that as one unit of a thousand different parts. If you just looked at the bodies, okay, there are a lot of dots up in the sky, and they, well, I don't know why, And if you could only consider, you could only imagine their physical being, you would go, well, that's a mystery. That's going to stay a mystery. I don't know. But if we imagine every one of those birds has a force field, and it does, around it, and all of those force fields are touching other force fields in the flock, so all of their force fields are connected, even though when you look at them, you go, there's some space between their bodies, yep, but there's no space between their force fields. They're all interconnected, kind of like tiles on the floor. You go, oh, yeah, they're all touched. Or like cells in tissues of your muscles. It's like, oh, yeah. They all are working in harmony. These, yep. And it is the communication between the fields of the birds that allows them to make these maneuvers up in the sky that are so amazing to us and teach us that there's a form of communication that does not involve the five senses. And when you look at that, you go, you know what? This idea of force fields communicating to other force fields makes perfect sense. You know you're electric, right? You know you're magnetic, right? You know that everything is electromagnetic? Sun, the moon, the earth, you, me, the things in your environment are all electromagnetic. Our cells need electrical voltage in order to perform their normal functions, right? They have to be powered. These functions, they're like little teeny appliances, if you think of it like that. It takes electricity to excrete waste products from a cell. Oh, yeah, that's right. That makes sense. And it takes electricity to ingest food and water into that cell. Yeah. And it takes energy to communicate with other cells that are nearby. Yep. And it takes energy to reproduce healthy cells. And the list goes on and on. You go, well, that does make sense. The book by Jerry Tennant, a medical doctor in the Dallas area, Healing is Voltage, is an excellent book that describes this idea of the need for voltage. And we describe it in a lot of different ways. Oh, you need to be more alkaline and less acidic. Mm-hmm. You need more oxygen in your body because you're oxygen deprived. And you need more voltage in your body, in your cells, and because your voltage is down. I said the same thing, just using three different phrases, three different ways to say the same thing. We need our field to have enough life force, enough energy, in order to keep us healthy, in order to power the more solid, the denser part of us. The cell membrane needs electricity because it is what excludes certain things from entering the cell, and it allows other things, desirable things, to enter the cell. The more energy available to the cell membrane, this border around the cell, it allows it to be more effective. It allows it to be, in quotes, smarter, end quotes. So it, Come on in. So it would know what to exclude and what to allow. Think of this. That's not too hard to grasp, right? Take a person with a lower awareness, lower electrical person, depleted energy, and they're going to make decisions. They're going to make decisions about what they put into their minds, what they put into their bodies, what they bring into their field. Their judgment is going to be impaired. Their decision-making is going to be faulty. It's not going to be that effective. You go, wow. I think it's our failure to appreciate ourselves. That's one of those first three points that I made about stress. We fail to appreciate our children, other people, our pets, even inanimate objects, as electrical magnetic systems. If we did understand these facts, you know what? I have to take steps. You would want to take steps to protect and enhance your electromagnetic nature, your field. Well, I'm not going to let that in my field. I'm not. No. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't enhance my survival. That would be counterproductive. No. And as our awareness goes up, and that there's a direct parallel between our voltage, our energy, our oxygenation, you go, I'm functioning better. No, thank you. No toxins for me, thanks. No hatred for me, thanks. No poisons for me, thanks. And we would leave the TV off at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Bruce Lipton, who you know about, scientist and author of Biology of Belief and other books, says that, contrary to popular opinion before him, that the nucleus of the cell is not the brain of the cell. It always was considered the brain of the cell. Oh, that's the brain of the cell. That's the brain of the cell. He said, no. No, it's not, because a cell can still function if the brain is removed, if the nucleus were to be removed. If you can remove this part of a cell and it still functions, guess what? It is not the brain. It is not the control center. It's a file cabinet. It's a file cabinet of the cell. The brain of the cell is the cell membrane. The outer physical structure of the cell is the brain. I used to think, man, that's interesting. That's interesting. And then in 2010, October 14th, when I was gifted the PDFs of Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, and I'm reading these some weeks, months later, and I arrive at letter 5, Christ says, here's evidence of consciousness. Here's evidence of intelligence. The cell membrane has intelligence. It has consciousness. It knows what to take into the cell for its health and its growth, and it knows what to keep out. That is consciousness, that wisdom to be able to do that. I thought, oh, that's cool. Bruce Lipton said this. Christ says this. Other people now are saying it. I like that. I like it. The outer edge of a cell's being, its structure, keeps it alive. If it didn't have that border, that boundary, that fence, that area, that space that could distinguish between life-enhancing, life-decreasing. Good for me, bad for me. Helpful, poisonous. You go, yeah. We wouldn't be alive very long. That cell would be dead, and so would the structure that was made up of cells. If we only consider our human physicality, you know, you look down at your hands, you look at your arms, and as I'm doing right now, you go, oh, yeah. Well, you know what? My skin is like an outer boundary of my physicality. It's my outer covering that, as long as I don't cut it or scratch it or break that skin in some way, it's going to be pretty effective at preventing or excluding dirt or infectious materials from penetrating. Not real subtle things, though. It won't keep out subtle things, but it'll keep out, you know, protozoa, bacteria, paramecians, amoebas, and that sort of thing. You go, okay. Makes sense to me. But there's got to be something other than skin as our outer covering. I will bet everybody on this call has had the experience of sensing that somebody is staring at you. Oh, wow, somebody's staring at me. I can feel it. And then you subtly turn around, try to determine if somebody is staring at you. Perhaps somebody across the room in a restaurant is trying to determine, do I know that person? And they're staring. Or it could be less curiosity and have a different purpose. But you go like, now, it's pretty obvious, right, that a physical stare is not a physical touch. It's not like somebody walks over and taps on you. Excuse me, are you, do I know you? That's not what's happening. So what part of us is sensing this non-physical environmental signal that we call a stare? How could we have that sense? I believe that that non-physical level that we have, a force field with an outer edge, it's not rigid, it's pliable, it's flexible, it moves, you know, kind of like a sack almost, that it's like, it's not like the shell of an egg. It's not like a football helmet, real rigid and hard. You know, it's constantly moving. Like, maybe that's true. Maybe we're like the cell that I described earlier. Consider this idea. Our physical body is like the nucleus. It's a container of information. It's a file cabinet. It's a storage facility of experiences, beliefs, fears, hopes, dreams, falsehoods, superstitions, on and on and on and on and on. Everything we have ever heard or felt or thought or experienced. Like, But because we perceive it so easily with the five senses, we go, that's me. That's me. That body is me. And it is the totality of me. That's all of me. You're looking at it right there. If you hug me, you're like, oh, I'm hugging all of you there is. It's like, how about the real intelligent part of us is the outer edge of our field or our field entirely, and we just happen to be the solid part, the file cabinet. I think my brain is inside my head. Well, the thing they labeled brain, they called it a brain, is inside your head and inside my head. But maybe that's not really where the control device actually is. I'm getting confused now, right? It's like, I never thought of it like this before. Here's what people commonly think. This attitude. I can only believe things that I can perceive with my five senses. So, let's talk about the human mind. It's in your head. It's right up there in the human brain, because the brain is physical matter, which we can see if we do an autopsy on somebody. It's like, yep. The mind is in that gray matter. It's in there. It's inside of it, or it is, the brain is equal to the mind. Other people go, well, it's not really the gray matter. It's in the pineal gland, or it's some other structure in the body, or it's in multiple bodies. Oh, it's in the gut. It's in the gut. So it's the same idea of trying to place where's the soul? The soul is in the... and then we make up an answer to that. Where is the soul in the human body? What organ houses the soul? Lots of different points of view on that. Like, Let's talk about the field. In letter 7 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, Christ talks about energy depletion of the field producing symptoms of illness. As the energy in the field goes down, and you can imagine a balloon around us now, as that goes down, we will affect the physical structure within that field, our bodies, our organs. But because the depletion doesn't necessarily happen instantaneously, like boom, boom, and we go like, I don't get there's a connection between a mental, emotional event and, say, for that energy exchange experience and the fact that I have a physical symptom of a cold or a flu or cancer or diabetes or any number of illnesses. Like, I don't get that the symptom is an effect of a mental, emotional consciousness cause. It's like, But as a rule of thumb, somebody says, I've started displaying symptoms of an illness on this date. And I would say, back up in time 36 months and see if there's some sort of event, energy exchange experience, a mental, emotional consciousness event that really was shocking to you, really shocked your system, right? Damaged your field, I might say today. Like, and in a lot of cases, they're able to identify just such an event. I have this image of our force field that surrounds our physical structure as containing, and I could call that force field our consciousness, but it contains all of our thoughts, feelings, words, actions that we ever spoke, that we ever felt, or we were in the presence of. So somebody else could have experienced that. And if we were party to it, like in the womb or in the room, it would have penetrated us too. So other people's experiences of fears, their beliefs, their superstitions, their angers, all of that stuff would have been added into our field. Bruce Lipton, again, I refer to him, says, up until about the age of 6, children are not able to filter out stuff. So they hear something up to that age, it goes right into their subconscious minds. It is added, in my language, to the force field. It goes right into the garden of our consciousness. So if you were in a family from conception up to about 6 years old, I think it's actually older than that, but I'll go with Bruce and stop at 6, and you heard or felt or saw or noticed or intuitive real negative energies about other people or yourself, they went right in to our field. They would be unchallenged. We wouldn't go, oh, this is not about me. This doesn't make sense. We would be too unaware as a child to recognize that. So they don't get evaluated. They don't get challenged. They don't get deflected. They just go right in. Today, I would say, that child's force field had a porous boundary, maybe a very, very limited boundary at that, that over time develops, as their identity develops, it becomes stronger and more capable of deflecting and repelling nonsense. But early on, doesn't have that capability. It hasn't developed the outer edge to that field. I recall reading this story some years ago, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, and I didn't keep the email. It was disappointing to me now. A woman and her son were in an automobile accident. They, on a cold winter night, slid on a bridge and went through the barrier into the water, and both of them drowned. They drowned in that icy river. People were able to get their bodies out of the river, and the emergency people on the scene were able to resuscitate the woman. She tells the story that even as she was drowning, she had this perception that everything is going to be okay. Relax. Everything is going to be okay. So she drowned, and so did her son. So now they resuscitated her on the bank of the river, but they were not able to do that to the son. So they rushed them both to the hospital and put oxygen on both of them, and it improved the mother really rapidly, but it just kept the son alive. His body was alive, but they thought this kid is dead, he's brain dead, nothing they can do. So when the woman would sleep at night for the first couple of nights, she would have everything is going to be okay. She perceived from somewhere that everything was going to be okay. In the morning, the doctor said to her, there's nothing we can do for your child. We recommend that we disconnect him from life support and let him die. No, I can't do that. And so they left him connected. The next night, in the dream, it was, everything is going to be all right. Do this. Invite your friends to come to the hospital and stand around your son and fill his field with love. Say everything, praise him, love him, feel it. Whatever they can do to add love to his field, have them do that. She woke up, called a friend, explained what needed to be done. That friend got a whole bunch of friends together. They came to the hospital and they did that. They filled the field of this little boy. And he came back to life. He regained consciousness. When he was let out of the hospital, he was perfectly normal, except for a slight speech impediment that he had speech therapy for. Other than that, thoughts, feelings, all of his capabilities, physically and mentally and emotionally, were all perfect. They filled his field with love. I've mentioned on some of these calls my younger brother George, who died 15, 16 months ago. At one time, George planted 200 fruit trees on his property. And he put up a 5-foot fence around it to keep the deer out. This is on Long Island. Deer overpopulated. And at night, the deer would jump over the fence. That boundary didn't keep them out. They would jump over the fence and eat the leaves off the trees. He tried everything he could, hanging hair, human hair from that he got from the barbershop on the branches that was supposed to discourage deer from coming, thinking there's a human right around here. It didn't work. He did everything he could except shoot him. He didn't shoot the deer. He wasn't open to that idea. George, big strong guy, Vietnam veteran, ex-United States Marine. He and my brother John owned and worked in, they did the work in their construction company, so they were big, tough guys. George wouldn't even kill a bug, never mind a deer. He said to me once when he was down here in Florida, we were walking past a bug, and I thought he was about to kill it, and he looked at me and said, nope. Everybody has to earn a living. And he walked past that bug. I thought, wow, I had those sensibilities as well. I thought, how was a really tough guy sensitive to other life forms such as animals? Yeah, I can see Bambi, you know, right? Look at the eyes, how can you shoot Bambi? But insects. I say, George had energy patterns in his force field that made him sensitive to the little guy, that made him sensitive to the underdog, that made him sensitive to the need to protect those that couldn't protect themselves. George was the 7th out of 7 kids. Of the 3 boys, he was the smallest in stature. So he was, compared to John and I, smaller. He was the underdog. He was the little guy. And he wasn't protected. He, as the youngest child in the family, experienced our parents when they were the most dysfunctional. And I think that that concept, that set of concepts of what was in his force field, explains our behaviors. Imagine this. In my mind, I've got a diagram of a force field that surrounds a stick figure. That's the physical you and me, right? And in this circle around us, maybe an oval, I would say, this is how I would write in what I'm talking about. I put a capital E with a superscript 3, almost like a chemical symbol, E, with a 3 near the upper right-hand corner of that E. That stands for energy exchange experience. But I would put a plus sign next to it, or I would put a minus sign next to it. You and I have had negative and positive energy exchange experiences, and those patterns exist within our force field. I would put just plain plus sign and plain minus signs throughout that field. Maybe those things represent beliefs or judgments that you and I have about things, where we judge them good or we judge them bad. So they're there as well. So our interpretations of our energy exchange experiences are what make them positive or negative. The meanings that we give to them make them positive or negative. We create this. Shakespeare says something like, nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Our thinking makes it so. Our thinking puts the plus or the minus sign in the field. Like, If we were talking about the processing of an environmental signal, right? Bruce Lipton likes that phrase, so do I, having heard that from him. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, an environmental signal. Just imagine this. If I'm talking about our sight, our vision, seeing something, I'll say this is how people think of it. Light is reflected off of an object. I'm looking at a computer screen or cabinets or the phone in my hand or any number of things, a picture. Light is reflected off of that. That light penetrates, it enters my eye, and it is processed now, impulse, a lot of physical things go, and this impulse moves on the optic nerve to my brain, and where it is compared to this inventory of information that I store in my file cabinet of my brain or in my body. It's there. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Most people, that's how it happens. Yep, that's it. That's it. But I say, I wonder. I wonder if that's true. What if it's not true? What if this is what happens? What if, as light is reflected off of that object and it enters our field, it comes into our force field, and as it's passing through the boundary of our force field, if it's perceived as a threat, not because of some experience in the past, be some negative E3 event or some just a negative event or judgment, boop, it's a threat. Now all of a sudden, our defenses in our physicality would be activated. But let's imagine that didn't happen. That didn't happen. It wasn't negative. It comes into the field and it makes it through the boundary, but then it collides with one of these other energy patterns, positive or negative. And then it is the activation of that positive or negative energy pattern that now triggers our behavior. I had this thought. Where'd that come from? I don't know. I had this feeling. Where'd that come from? I don't know. I'm going to say these words. Where'd they come from? I'm going to take this action or I'm going to not take action. Where did that come from? Something got activated in our force field, I think. You know, you and I have been inspired by something we saw. George was inspired in his caring of deer and dogs and other animals and even insects by something in his field. You and I have been saddened by something that we saw, terrified of something that we've seen, horrified by something that we've seen, angered by something that we've seen. I would say that certainly is true for George in Vietnam. And even as a child growing up, that would be true. I suggest that this could be true, that our tendencies to process information in certain patterns is directly related to the energy exchange experiences, positive and negative, and the other positive and negative experiences that we've had, and judgments and so on, that have been added to our force field throughout our lives from conception on. If you can imagine what was added to our force field since conception by our parents and others, and including ourselves, you go, whoa. Here are some images to make this point. In war, one or both enemies will try to put explosive mines in the territory controlled by the other enemy. They do it in order to control the enemy or, ideally, to damage the enemy. In the Vietnam War, the United States put mines in the harbor of North Vietnamese cities. We did it to impede their shipping. If they tried to ship their stuff out or bring supplies in for their military, they would hit a mine and, oops. We dropped cluster bombs in Vietnam, and we've done it in Iraq. They drop them out of the air, and now they're in the soil. And if the bad guy, according to us, stepped on them, they would explode, and no more bad guy. Other countries use these kind of weapons indiscriminately throughout the world. This was one of the big causes of Princess Diana, when she was alive, to outlaw the use of these kind of bombs, because she knew, and we know, and it seems pretty predictable, right, that the main casualties of this kind of weaponry were innocent children, innocent women, and innocent men, and innocent animals, by accidentally stepping on these things that were all over the place. I draw this parallel. Your force field and my force field and all of our force fields are like the harbors with explosive devices floating in them. Our job is to cleanse our force field of these energy patterns. You go, I could have just as easily said this. Our job is to cleanse our consciousness of negatives. Our job is to heal our beliefs. Our job is to heal our hearts. Our job is to gain mastery over our warlike egos. Our job is to add love to bring us together instead of adding hate and fear to blow us apart. This is the greatest news. Divine consciousness is seeking to provide everything needed to our force field for our health, our growth, our healing, our protection, our fulfillment of need, our work, our survival, our success, our happiness. We just have to open up to it. We just have to allow it in to work for us, through us, and in us. And us is our force field. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.